You, Robert McFarlane,
right,
are in a car accident.
Fuck off. It's rude.
You get a metal plate put in your head.
Okay, it sounded better.
You grow up.
Rude.
You fuck a car.
Okay.
You get preggers.
Right.
You bleed some oil.
Mm-hmm.
You kill multiple people. You break your face on a sink to blag your way into a fire chief's life posing as his missing son. You become a firefighter. And after everything, you die during childbirth, where your child is born with the spine of a car. Also, you are a French. You know who you are. You know what film we're doing, right?
Yeah.
I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast.
That's right, we're doing Julia de Cornell's Sophomore Movie, 2021's Titane. But before we get into what we're doing, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
New job, new beginning.
New job.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
That's happening on Friday. I'm looking forward to that. We can say more about it later.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward. How are you, man?
I wrote a Hulk Hogan joke.
Okay.
Hulk Hogan is dead.
He is.
I'd just like to imagine him in the afterlife.
Yeah.
Him and Chris Benoit duking it out at Cell in a Hell.
Fucking hell. You couldn't figure a way to get that in the show?
No, I just thought... I probably could have done, but I was really proud of it. I thought I'd just front load.
Mate, fair. Mate, flash it out, you know what I mean? Shower, not a grower. I've rediscovered a band from my childhood.
You have?
Which I've been sending you constantly.
Constantly? Fucking constantly.
Hey, man. In the words of the Murder Dolls, motherfucker, I don't care. All right, so let's sum up the show a little bit.
Let's talk about how this film affected us.
How Julia de Cornell followed up her smash debut Raw.
How the structure of this film is a personal one.
How Titane challenges social norms with its themes.
Most importantly.
What's it really mean?
What's it mean?
What does it mean?
Now listen, we're gonna get deep into the themes of this film. Before we do, it'd be good for those of you that aren't planning to see it and have no desire to see this bizarre French body horror movie, know what the film's about so this episode is relevant to you.
I need to step in immediately because right. It's not just a body horror movie. Julia de Cornell has said that it's actually quite offensive that she puts all of her heart and soul into her work for someone to just go, it's body horror.
We'll get to that.
We will.
But before we before we have that particularly emotional breakdown, let's go into a plot breakdown. So
yeah.
If you are hoping to see this and haven't yet, here's your spoiler warning.
Go and fucking watch it though, because this is it's worthy. I've written the breakdown. I've put it into three parts.
Okay.
This isn't a three-act film.
It's not.
So it was really fucking hard to try and sum it up. I've done my best, and I just thought, be a bit silly with it. Why not?
Yeah,
because the film is a bit silly.
Okay. I'll start us off. Yeah. Alexia has a titanium plate in her head and a suspiciously intense love for cars.
Yeah.
So much so that she does fuck one.
Yeah, she fucks a car. Yeah.
After a childhood car crash leaves her both emotionally and physically altered, adult Alexia becomes a stripper at car shows and is also, on the side, a serial killer.
Yes.
It's dead simple to follow so far, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Her weapon of choice is a chopstick hairpin.
Yes.
Because, of course.
Yeah.
After things get out of control and the cops close in, she torches her house, killing her parents.
Mm-hmm.
Fakes her own death with DIY facial reconstruction surgery via a public bathroom sink.
Yep.
And goes on the run. Just a standard family movie.
This is about 20 minutes in as well.
This is the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just a tale as old as time.
Yeah. Hamlet, some would say. After breaking her own face, Alexia poses as Adrienne, a boy who went missing a decade ago.
Mm.
She's taken in by Adrienne's grieving, hench-as-fuck firefighter dad, Vincent, who is clearly clinging to this miracle a little too hard.
Yeah, because she looks nothing like the missing child. And this is a point that continuously annoyed me
yeah.
for the entire film. Anyway,
this,
sorry.
This
I've,
makes
no,
the
I've
film.
Inter- I've interrupted.
That
you
entire
carry
point
on.
Makes the film for me, and I will go into
okay.
why. I will go into
okay.
why later.
Strap myself down.
Meanwhile, Alexia, now undercover and rapidly pregnant with what appears to be a car baby, tries not to give the game away while lactating motor oil and dancing weirdly at fire stations. Nobody said that French cinema was subtle.
I mean, I've said that many times.
You have.
Because it fucking can be.
It shouldn't be.
Things spiral from weird, I mean, yeah,
yeah.
to tenderly, horrifically beautiful.
Yeah.
I've got notes.
Yeah.
Despite all the obvious red flags, oil out the nipples, mm-hmm. aggression, mm-hmm. being not very Adrian at all,
yeah.
Vincent accepts Alexia unconditionally.
Gorgeous.
And in a strangely moving... And in a twist, their bond deepens, leading to an insane, oddly heartwarming finale. Okay, yep. Leading to an insane finale involving childbirth, identity, and chrome-plated destiny.
Yeah.
Titan is body horror, you pedant.
Carry on.
Family drama.
Thank you.
And vehicular eroticism all rolled into one.
There we go.
And somehow it drives straight into your heart.
Keep it going.
Why are you making me read this?
Coming for the landing.
In an American muscle car that is also now an absent father. I hate you. It's great. Right.
So, it's good.
So you enjoyed this.
This film, dude, this film is probably in my top 10 films of all time. Like, this is literally
great.
It's
happy
one of
you.
Those that gets me on a very fundamental level. Like,
okay.
There is a surface level, very fun, very silly movie, left scratching my head being like, mm-hmm. What the fuck did I just watch?
Right.
And then on the second watch through, which is, you know, my critical watch through, first watch entertainment, second watch critical watch through, I was like, ooh, hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. There's some similarities here from Julia De Corno's work in her debut smash feature, Raw.
Yeah, I mean, it features one of the characters from
And all the same names. Yeah, like, Alexa, Justine, Adrienne.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like she just did a fucking find and replace in Word.
No, there's her first short movie,
right.
Junior, is also Justine. And
okay, yeah. So she's found a thing she likes.
She's just consistent. She's consistent. Before I get into what I thought about it, I want to know your thoughts on it, because obviously I've brought this to the show thinking that this would be a fun one for us to do. I thought you would get something from it. I didn't know what, but hit me with your... What did you think about it? What was your initial reaction?
Imagine what you feel about the film.
Yeah.
But imagine that you did not emotionally connect with any of the characters throughout all of it.
Okay.
Very little happens for any reason.
Ooh.
So it then just becomes... Or any reason that you believe.
Okay. There you go. There you go.
Let's take away your emotional connection to the characters,
mm-hmm.
and let's take away your trust in its logic.
Yeah.
What are you left with? You're left with 2 hours
mm-hmm.
of somebody describing a dream they had at the water cooler whilst you try and back out of the room.
This is what you don't like, Beau was afraid.
That's fascinating. That's great. Yeah, great. Cool. Yeah. I must get on. And they're like, and then.
Right.
And then it was that. And so, like I said with Raw, there's an obvious talent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not one that says anything to me.
Okay.
And I feel like this film is a little bit like a tampon. I'll have it in the house for someone else in case they need it.
Right.
But I'm never going to need it myself.
You just didn't get much out of it.
No.
Okay. That's fine.
I don't hate it.
That's fine.
You know?
Because it is gorgeously shot. Right. It's a very well-made film.
What I'm curious to do this episode is listen to you.
Okay.
Almost like a kind of science experiment. See how you got something out of this.
Okay.
And then that will be my enjoyment I got from Titan. I'm happy with that.
I'm happy with this too, because I'm glad that you had this reaction rather than the one that I thought you were going to have. I'm glad that you had this reaction because it now means that I get the opportunity to try and paint a picture.
Mm.
It's like an interpretation of a painting.
Yeah, exactly.
It means something different to everyone else. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
It ruined me on a whole other level, this film.
Right,
mate.
Okay.
A whole other level. It hits me deep in my soul to a fundamental degree, a molecular degree.
This is anthropologically fascinating for me to watch.
I watched it a couple times, felt changed. Like,
good God.
In real life, fully changed. Because there's a few commentaries on stuff that we just take for granted, stuff that we can, like... We live our lives through these social constraints and restrictions and stuff like this, and everything that defines us and labels and categories and all this stuff that we all subscribe to, whether we know it or not.
Mm-hmm.
This film holds up a mirror and goes, but what if?
Right.
And it made me so horribly uncomfortable.
Okay.
That I had to sit and really look at myself.
Okay.
And I loved it.
Right.
But I fucking hated it.
Okay.
And now I feel like I'm a little bit healed from it. It's weird.
This is odd.
It's weird.
Imagine I just held up this empty bottle of fizzy pop.
Yeah.
And said that exact speech.
Yeah.
You'd be confused and concerned, right?
I'd be desperate to know why.
Right.
I would
exactly.
be desperate to know
this
why.
This is where I'm at. I'm like, but how?
Then let me tell you why, right? Because I fucking adore this film, this weird circus mirror haunted by a nightmare movie. I adore it.
Right.
How many horror movies are there, Rob? Just a guess.
At least 8.
You are correct. There are at least 8 horror films. Letterboxd has got 65,000 catalogued horror movies.
Okay.
But that doesn't count in any of the unregistered ones, the independent movies, the stuff like this that are all like self-releases.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to put a guess at around 100,000. Absolute minimum.
Minimum, yeah.
There is going to be far more than that, but absolute minimum 100,000 horror movies. How many horror movies feature serial killers?
Oh, I'd say at least six.
At least six, you are correct. Mm. It's impossible to say because the definition is too broad and there's too many genres within horror, too many subgenres that kind of like bleed in. You've got psychological thriller, slashers, all this stuff, right? And the term serial killer itself is too broad. So shitloads of films feature like assassins, spree killers, mass murderers, all this stuff. So all of these can sort of bleed into each other.
Right. The Venn diagram is mushy. And also you get difficult mushy. Because like, is John McClane a serial killer?
See what I'm saying?
Like, I mean, no, but...
Depending on your definition.
Right.
Did kill multiple people.
Right, exactly. Gets to the end, he's like, I won't kill you, otherwise I'll be just like you. And
exactly.
Then 7,000 dead henchmen behind him. You're like, oh, right.
There you go.
Really?
So what about horror movies that feature female serial killers?
Two.
There is definitely two. You
there's,
are correct.
Carrie.
Carrie's one of them.
And Gone Girl.
Oh, Gone Girl's a good one. That's not in my list of examples, which I'm about to read out right now.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Here's a few.
Okay.
The classics, Basic Instinct, Carrie, Monster, Bride of Chucky, I Spit on Your Grave, Friday the 13th, because as we all know, it's Mrs. Voorhees, not Jason
Voorhees.
I've
never seen him.
Spoiler. Natural Born Killers, Hellraiser, Species.
Okay.
Right, and I know what you're thinking. Yeah, they're all quite old though, Ben. All right, so more recent. Orphan, Last Night in Soho, Strange Darling, X, Pearl, Jennifer's Body, Scream 2, Switchblade Romance, House of a Thousand Corpses, May.
Yeah,
and now
I'd remember May.
May,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And now I know what you're thinking, but Ben, these are all schlocky horrors. There's no real writers here. Stephen King, you say? Misery.
Yeah.
Christine. Yes, Christine's about a car.
Is she a serial killer in Misery?
Yes.
She's a murderer?
Yes. That's not the first time. You think that's the first time she fucking hobbled someone? You think she was just... She was the nurse. She was the nurse that was famous for killing all those people.
Okay.
Serial killer. Okay. And then Christine. And yes, it is about a car, but also cars are all female, Rob. It's 2025. Get your head out your ass.
I know this. I'm a gentleman. I open car doors for women.
See?
And if I like them, I slow down.
That's just good manners at this point.
Manners.
That's just good manners.
Below 70, there you go.
And now I know what you're thinking. They're all English-speaking films, Ben. And I'll agree. You want some foreign ones? Mm-hmm. Audition. Let the Right One In. The Ring. Ju-on. And lest we forget, Julia De Corno's smash debut feature, Raw.
Smash.
It fucking went through the roof.
It went through the roof, yeah. It's up there with Jurassic Park, Close Encounters.
Award-winning film.
Yeah, it's like Avatar. It goes Avatar, then Raw,
I think you're
then
looking
Jaws.
At the wrong branch of cinema.
Right, okay.
You're looking at the wrong branch, but that's fine because I've just got one more question.
I was looking at the Smash branch.
You were?
Yeah.
I've just got one more question. How many films are there that feature a female serial killer who begins a journey as a stripper at car shows, fucks and gets impregnated by a car, who then goes on to commit arguably the most heinous example of identity theft and becomes a firefighter, all whilst on one of the most insane but pure unexpected healing journeys, challenging our understanding of societal norms, philosophical beliefs, and the human experience itself?
I've not seen Rugrats Go Wild.
You've not?
But.
So you're saying that could be a possibility?
It could be. There's
no way of knowing.
It's called Rugrats Gone Wild. It sounds like an Epstein-funded production.
Yeah, it sounds like one of the plays that they... It doesn't matter. We'll move on.
I'm going to say one, and it's Titane.
Just one.
It's just one
that
film.
That we know of.
Yep.
Titane. If there are more, please send them my way, because...
Yeah, send them to Ben.
Yeah, send them
just
my
Ben.
Way. Just Ben. This is how I'm going to categorize it, and this is why.
As a unique film.
It's unique beyond belief.
I'll give you the fact that it's unique.
Stands on its own.
I will say that was the main bit, that was the main compliment I used to give musicians that I worked with when their stuff was awful.
Yeah.
I'd clap and I'd go, oh my God, that's really unique.
Okay.
Well, no one's doing that.
Is I'm not lying.
No, I was true. I wasn't. That's the whole point. That's why I could use it. I was like, it's true. There's no value judgment in that statement.
Sure.
It sounds like a compliment.
But it's a backhanded put down.
But it's just a fact.
It's a subtle dig.
It's unique.
Yeah, that's fine.
Right? Titane's unique.
Well, for me, Julia De Corno smashed the fucking ass out of this one. It's hit every single thing that I could possibly want from a movie.
Okay.
It's left me physically changed.
Right. Okay.
And I feel like a better person for it.
I am objectively glad there.
Honestly, so good. I'm going to get into a little bit of story of Julia De Corno, though, because after the success of her feature debut Raw, which we covered a couple of weeks ago, if you've not heard that episode, go check it out.
Go check it out. It's a good episode.
Very fun. Julia was determined to write an even better film that was smarter and weirder than Raw.
Okay.
That was the intention.
That was the intent.
That was the intent.
That was the mission statement.
But the ideas did not come.
Right.
At all.
Funny that.
So for one whole year,
right,
she woke up every day, sat in front of a computer, and wrote absolutely nothing for one full year. And this is what she said. When I say a year, it's not like, oh, it's a year and I'm going on holidays.
Not a George R. R. Martin year.
No, it's a year. Every right. morning you wake up, you take a shower, you dress, you sit in front of the computer all day and nothing comes. And every now and then she would write something, but she would immediately delete it out of disgust.
Right, okay.
She's like, that is fucking nonsense. I'm not doing this.
Right.
The expectation on her now is huge, right? Because she's done something in horror that's not been done for a while. She's won awards at Cannes. She's had people faint at Toronto Film Festival. It's been not through her doing. It's been marketed as the grossest film of 2017.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so this has all been forced on her, and now everyone has this expectation around her. So Julia hates having her films, which she sees as like really deep art. It's like deep, complex genre.
You would
hopping.
If you were making this. They're like, it's actually art.
They're their own little monsters, right?
Yeah.
And she hates having them reduced to just body horror.
Which I do all the time, because that's all I get from them.
That's fine. That is fine.
Yeah.
It's just she's not a fan of it, but that's fine. She says in an interview, people wanted Raw 2, like Raw, but more gory.
Raw.
I knew I was not going to yield to them. At the same time, you can't help but be afraid that if you don't give the people what they want, then they're not going to like it. And when asked why she didn't take a break away from the pressure...
This is what I was going to ask. So just before you give the quote, I feel like, and this is a wild generalization that I will not explain... I feel like she's a very heterosexual woman.
Okay.
Because I feel like if you've been with a lady intimately, sometimes when you're sort of 25 minutes in and nothing's happening, you go, I need to stop because clearly this person has lost all feeling down there and this is never going to happen. If I sat at my computer for a year and just went, I've got to write the best thing, it feels a little bit like breathlessly trying to unclog a dishwasher. And then you've just got to step away and go, maybe the feeling will come back.
100%.
Right.
I see what you're saying. I think the thing that you mentioned about being with someone and it just not happening.
Yeah.
I think it's a connection issue.
Right.
Which is fine. That's completely natural. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I feel like Julia's connection to her art would be much more intimate and much more personal.
Maybe.
Rather than trying to understand a whole different other person.
Yeah, I feel like she's just angry spider monkey finger banging the typewriter, just being like, why won't you work?
Yeah.
Do you not love me?
I mean, that is a thought. I think she was more sort of sitting there panicking that she was about to get fucking booed off stage at the next Cannes Festival. Yeah. Everyone was expecting her to be amazing.
That's never going to work creatively, right?
Never.
I feel like we should all know that.
Yeah. So when an interviewer asked her, why don't you take a break away from the pressure, Julia said, there's no way I can actually enjoy my life if I think I'll never be able to do something ever again. She says the only way was to try. And that is fucking inspirational in a way that me and you can relate to, because there are weeks that we get to, like, we have to record tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want to do this.
Yeah.
I feel like shit.
Something I've been saying recently is that the podcast is a fantastic thing to have done.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the episode's recorded and edited and launched and we've got the socials for the week ready.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm loving it.
Golden.
Friday, when it's like, oh God, we have to do all that.
In 2 days.
It's oh my God.
Everything has to be ready to go in 2 days.
Maybe we could publish Wednesday. We can't publish Wednesday. It will ruin us.
Mm-hmm. This pressure for us is minimal.
Yeah.
For someone that's got an audience that can't expecting the next fucking greatest thing that's ever existed because they're judging you on your first movie, pressure, I can't even comprehend. But the fact that she sits there and goes, what am I supposed to do with my life?
Right.
This is what I do. I'm just going to try.
It's the one bit of sympathy I always had for, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, creatives I've worked with, where they make something up, they pull something out of their ass.
Yeah.
It's due to 1,000 things that are only true at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They present it and the world goes, that's fucking excellent.
Yeah.
Do it again, but different. And they're like, 100%. I don't know how I did it the first time.
It just happened, mate.
It just happened.
Yeah.
And like, I'm now that I'm trying to do it,
exactly,
it's not coming out the same.
No.
And then they're like, oh.
The intent shifted.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. That. The issue is that.
And then I'd sit there with these musicians in rooms,
mm-hmm.
and they'd be losing their minds. Everyone's like, why are they such a dick? And I'm like, because they have a mortgage,
yeah,
and their manager has a mortgage, and I have rent,
yeah,
and we all need it to succeed. Otherwise, none of us are paying those.
This is exactly it. See what I mean?
Yeah,
so this is a whole different kettle of fish now. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to take you back through a little bit of Julia De Corno's life to get us to the point where she gets the inspiration for Titane.
Right, okay. Where are we starting?
You'll remember Rob McFarlane. And some of the listeners, if you've not heard the Raw episode, go listen. But I explained in the Raw episode about Julia's parents. They were doctors.
Yes, they were.
Mom's a gynecologist. Dad's a dermatologist.
Yes, because we were joking about that. Must have been a really interesting meet cute.
I tell you what, right? I read an interview where where one of the interviewers was sort of like, Julia explained this to them and was like, yeah, Mom, you know, Mom's a gynecologist. Dad's a dermatologist. And the interviewer went, ah, so inside and out. And I thought that was the fucking funniest thing ever. And her response was, that is the grossest statement that you can make about that situation, which was fucking amazing. Oh, that's just come to me. That's hilarious. So yeah, a nice little meet cute. They would both sit at the dinner table when Julia was very, very young and openly discussed cases that were like in a clinical matter. So they would look at human bodies and death in a very matter-of-fact way.
Yeah.
So the human condition, the body and death were all topics of discussion. They were the reason that Julia does what she does now. This is why she's so obsessed
with
the
physical
human body.
Forms of people and are we our meat? And
Are we our body or is our body us?
Yeah.
Like this whole conundrum. Julia says, I remember when I was in my bath at age 5 and I realized that I was going to die.
Fucking hell.
That's a heavy thought to have as a 5-year-old, buddy. As a 5-year-old, that's a fucking...
God, she's such a French.
Can you imagine the peace that would come from that in your later life?
No.
As an adult. If you've already accepted death since you were 5 years old, you're not going to be like sitting around shitting it, twiddling your thumbs, are you?
I think I'd be in a permanent state of panic. I'd be like, right, I've only got 40 years left.
Yeah, but this is the thing. You would have had 40 years to deal with it rather than the 5 years before your death. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
It's good and negative. Yeah, yeah. It's good and negative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a double-edged sword.
I'm struggling to deal with the thought of death and I am 36. But so at 6 years old at a dinner party, her cinephile parents put her in front of the TV and she found herself watching. Have a guess.
Transformers, Age of the Beasts.
Yeah, that you are right. That came out exactly when this 37-year-old woman was.
I'm confused
six.
On the timeline.
It's fine.
Avatar 3.
Sure, that's the one.
Yeah, is that the one?
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
At
that does make
old.
More sense.
And I can relate to this massively because my brother and one of my sisters introduced me to horror movies far too young.
Right.
Far too young.
I was introduced to horror really young, but it was because my grandmother had a massive crush on Christopher Lee as Dracula.
Oh, so you had the Hammer horror side.
I had all the Hammer horrors, which aren't scary.
No, they're just goofy.
They're fun. So I was introduced to horror really young, except for one which is based on a train. And there's like a red-eyed demon at the back of the train and it turns people into zombies. It's like Train of Horror or something. It's got
I can't
Peter
remember
Cushing.
What it's called. I know exactly
it's like a
the
defrosted
film.
Ice creature.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
That one shat me the fuck up and I've
we
still got
to
think about
that one
red
soon.
Eyes in the dark.
Yeah. We need to do that one soon. I haven't seen that in
but
ages.
But not Texas Chainsaw, which is, feels much more viscerally real because it's not supernatural, right? It's redneck weirdos.
It's
and
cannibals.
You're like, they're a thing that live on the earth.
Yeah, it's cannibals that exist and just do their thing. They are completely accepted in their society and they crack on doing what they're doing. Almost
just like lesbians.
Like lesbians. I was gonna say Raw, but sure. Julia says, I didn't have a clue what was happening. I just accepted it as a kid would. So absolutely. Which is terrifying for a 6-year-old to say out loud. That would
no,
be terrifying.
I can see that as when you're six, you don't have that. You just go, this is a thing that exists on the earth and that must be okay because you're still in that phase where everything is new.
Yeah.
So there's no status quo to disrupt.
100%.
I get that.
Which
it's
is great.
Nice, yeah.
So Julia grew up writing poetry and short stories.
Bellend.
She would read Edgar Allan Poe and Mary Shelley. I'm looking at you here.
Yeah, I know.
This is
why
you.
Do you think I called her a bellend? Because I know how that turns out.
Watching
right?
David Cronenberg and David Lynch movies. She was entranced by the characters in these, like these creators, their monsters just encapsulated everything that she wanted to portray. So this is what she says about that. You always feel like a monster when you're a teenager. You stink, you have weird hair. The element of monstrosity in teenage years is incredibly enduring and real. So at 16 years old, a French publisher reaches out. They got wind of her poetry and they're like, do you want to write a full book? And she says, I froze. I didn't know if I could do more than what I've already done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't get published. and then I lost poetry, and it's like everything. You have to work to be good. It's not like some biblical illumination just falling on you.
No.
So she got presented with an opportunity to do that and then shied away from it when she was younger.
Fair.
Very valid life
Very
lesson.
Yeah, 16, yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean? So she studied English literature, studied philosophy, got accepted into La Fémis, which is one of the most prestigious film schools in France. She studied screenwriting, and by 20 years old, she knew that she was going to be a filmmaker.
Do you know what this is sounding like?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're saying a lot of things that I recognize from my own life.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of young interest in philosophy.
Right. You think this poetry. Is an accident that I've written all this fucking backstory and included every detail.
Right. I'm beginning to see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
But what I'm also noticing is, and this is a compliment to you, it's possible that the reason I don't like Titane
mm-hmm.
is it's the exact sort of fucking fart sniffy movie that I would have made if I hadn't met you at a formative age and you'd gone, you'd be in a bit of a bell end.
Stop it. Stop it.
Right, exactly, right?
Stop
it. Because I feel like there's a kind of, and I'm sure she's a very down to earth, very, very normal lady, but there's a sort of air of pretension to this film.
Okay.
That I really bounced off.
Right.
Because it presents its thesis and it presents its events
mm-hmm.
so matter-of-factly and so like, yeah, this is just what we're doing.
Yeah.
That I'm like, but you've given me nothing. You've just gone, be on board with this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not, it's because you're not cool or smart enough.
That's interesting.
Leaps of logic that I found offensive to have somebody go, just deal with this. Just go along with this. I'm like, but you've given me nothing to help with that.
Okay.
So the scene of her fucking a car,
mm-hmm.
she does a little dance on the car,
mm-hmm.
she has a shower, and then
the car knocks on the door. Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
There's a car knocking on the door.
Yeah.
She gets in the car, she fucks the car, and then we just move on with the film as if that's normal. But there's absolutely, it's never addressed.
It doesn't
It's
need to
never
be.
Justified. But for me, mm-hmm. if you're asking me to go along with this, I'm like, but why? And if I've not bonded with the character, because
mm-hmm.
she's a piece of shit and I don't like her.
That's very much the point.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've given me a character who I can't like.
Mm-hmm.
You've given me events that you've not described.
Mm-hmm.
And then you continue your film, mm-hmm. introducing people I don't like and things happening for seemingly non-realistic reasons.
Yeah.
I just go, what have you given me, Julia De Corno?
Because
I'm
really
giving you a lot of attention. I'm giving you a lot of my time and a lot of my attention.
I can't wait to get to what this really means.
Okay.
Like, I'm actually fizzing. I'm actually fizzing. Because all of this, mate, everything that you've just said is exactly why I love this movie. But I have reasons for everything that you've just said.
Okay,
I have reasons for all of it.
I will continue to bite my tongue until I hear them.
Okay. So, she knows that she's going to be a filmmaker. She makes a short film called Junior that mm-hmm. won the Best Short at Cannes Critics Week, and that terrified her.
Yeah.
She says, I distinctly remember thinking, oh my God, I'm going to be that one person who peaked with a short.
God forbid.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh no.
But she won, it was like the best short film at Cannes Week.
Right,
Even if that is your peak,
right.
Well fucking done.
Oh no, my
well
life.
Done. But also, I need to go into it because I've researched her so fucking much. I've watched hundreds of hours.
Jesus Christ.
I've literally gone through, I've combed as many interviews as I can find. She's one of the most confident people I've ever seen in my entire life.
I'm not surprised.
She's
never once questioned herself.
No, that's the thing though. She does. Every single step she questions herself, but she then decides a route and sticks to it.
Okay.
Which is fucking, honestly, I'm a little bit in love with her.
Okay,
because
I can
tell. Is so fucking, A, she's cool as fuck.
Right.
B, she's confident with everything. And B and C, she is like full of self-doubt.
Let
and
me
not
just
afraid
Google
to,
her.
She's not afraid to like look it in the eye.
Oh, I can see why you're in love with her. She's got a tiny chin and massive eyes.
That helps. That helps.
She looks like Paul from Hit Movie Paul. So
attractive fella.
There you go.
Attractive fella. So she wins this. She thinks, oh my God, I'm going to peak with a short.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's obviously followed up with a debut, Raw, which was marketed as the grossest movie of 2017.
Yeah, yeah, much to her system and dismay.
Exactly. And then that won the, I can't say this, it won the
I can't help you with this one.
Prize at Cannes.
Okay.
It's, fuck knows.
Screaming Monkey.
It won the Flaming Gibbon at Cannes. There you go. It may be fucking anything. So Julia was upset by how Raw was received, right?
Mm-hmm.
Go and listen to our episode if you want to know more on that. But here's a quick quote from her discussing it as a refresher for those that have heard it and as a little bit of context for those who haven't.
Right.
You make something. You do it with your heart and then people are prepared to throw up when they watch it. You have all these people say that they like your film, and at the same time, so many others have misunderstood it. Personally, I couldn't help but put this on myself, thinking, oh my God, maybe I should have expressed myself better. And with France, her home country, putting the highest level of restriction on Raw, which is fucking brutal, she says, I felt it was very unfair because there are like two scenes that are hard to watch in that film, and it's bullcrap. It's just another body.
Yeah.
It's just because it's different that it's disgusting.
Raw is not all that difficult a film to watch.
No, there's two bits that are very visceral, but that's because it's
they're not even that. Like
they're not that, but they...
The finger-eating scene, I assume, is one of them that you're discussing.
I'm not sure which two scenes.
But that's not that bad.
It's not that bad. It's not.
It's really not. Like, if you watch an Eli Roth or, like, Saw...
Yeah.
I guarantee you the Saw franchise is not at the highest level of...
Not in France.
...restriction in France, right? No. And Raw has nothing on those in terms of, like, visceral being shown...
Exactly.
Nonsense.
Why did they saw Raw the way that they not saw Saw? But then...
There we go.
If they saw Raw the way they saw Saw, it would be better for more.
There we go. There we go.
Stuck the landing.
Oh my God.
Ben read a book.
Ben, are you a rapper?
I don't know. I might be. I'm MC Benji.
Oh God.
Kicking kiddies in the knees.
Okay, this
stop
needs
me
stop.
If you please.
Yeah, I do please.
All right, well, if you please. So once she realized how fucking angry she was, in her words, at everything that people were expecting of my next film, everything I was expecting about my next film, I was angry at Raw in a way because it was taking up way too much space.
Yeah.
Once she accepted this anger, she was able to move past the writer's block and channel it into her next project. And this is where this sort of like energy comes from.
Okay.
It also helps to mention that at this point in her life, she also started having insanely graphic, vivid nightmares about giving birth to car parts.
Okay.
Which also inspired the story of Titane.
Do you know what? When you were telling me the fact, I was like, that's not relevant.
Yeah. Julia said about this, I think this collision between this pure act of life and the material that is dead and cold on the floor was something that disturbed me and also very attractive to me.
Oh, God. I mean... Okay, intellectually attractive. Like if I'm a writer and I'm having
a dream
about giving birth to car parts, I'd have to be a fucking moron to not recognize the power of that.
Exactly.
Image, right?
So you get it?
I get it.
See?
It's not, but I don't think she means it as in like I was aroused.
No. It was definitely not. Just... Bro, this is all I need you to be. You're exactly where I need you to be right now.
Okay, good.
You're in the cusp.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's the story of Julia DeCorno, and that's how she got to the point of writing to Titane after all.
Right.
Great little story.
Lovely story.
Insanely fucking cool person. Weird as fuck background that's led to some incredible art.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan.
I disagree.
I'm going to get into how the structure of this film mimics The Maker.
Gotcha.
So Julia Caesar films as one continuous gesture, right?
Right.
So she's trying to gauge our humanity and be more precise about what this means to us by pushing the audience into the deep, dark, grotesque depths.
Yeah.
Periodically. Okay. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I'm look. As a Park Chan-wook fan,
exactly.
I'm not faulting the intent. I'm 100%. Faulting the execution for 100%. Me personally.
100%.
Right?
So she confronts us with the body in all its beauty, but also in all of its fucking grossness. Physically fit characters struggling with like a stomach-turning skin condition or full body rashes or skin peeling from the bone. Yeah. It's just visceral shit, right? I can't think of a more effective and honest way to present the objective truth that we are all human and connect all of us in one philosophy than to make us all squirm in our seats to the same raggedy image that is portrayed. Whether you enjoy it or not, we all have a reaction to it.
There's a unifying factor in, right?
Exactly.
In looking at a human soul do something to a human body and go, oh, no, thank you.
Right.
Like, come together
right now
over this.
There you go. See?
Yep.
She's Ringo. So as I mentioned earlier, Julia studied philosophy, and this is Julia when an interviewer asked her about literary influences in her work.
Okay.
And how Titane fits in with philosophical ideas.
Right.
I very often say that movies and the way that I see the world is very existentialist. Obviously Sartre and Beauvoir.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say her name properly.
Beauvoir. You nailed it, yeah.
Simone de Beauvoir.
They're both on that bookshelf there.
Have you got The Second Sex?
No, I don't.
Which one of
Which is Beauvoir. I've got, I'd have to look it up, but I do have one up there.
Can I borrow it, please?
Yes, of course.
Because I've ordered the second sex.
Beauvoir's great, but she's very angry. And she's a part of feminism that we've moved forward from now.
100%.
Because the masculinity that she was reacting to was the masculinity of the 40s and 50s.
100%.
Which is understandable for her to be like, here's a bunch of stuff that's unacceptable. But you read it and you're like, well, obviously.
Yeah.
Because she's become...
But in the context of the 40s, and obviously as a fundamental understanding of what feminism was and how it's evolved, it's a fucking great read.
Yeah, massive.
I've ordered Second Sex.
Yeah, no, to be fair, that's because the one I've got, I think, is a novel, not a philosophical.
That's fine. Yeah, that'd be awesome. But it's not going to be here for a month because it's like a 40 quid book.
But
I found one copy that's coming from like the Czech Republic for £3.49.
Yeah, perfect.
But it is in the slowest possible. I think it might be on foot.
Yeah, that it's being delivered. I think just, the seller is walking it across Europe. I think
they've retired. They've got fuck all else on. They're I go for a stroll.
There'll just be a Daily Mail headline with some sad pictures of children dead washed up on the beach, but one of them will have a copy of Soma and Devoe.
That's exactly it, man.
Second Sex in their sandy little grips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't wait. It's going to be great. I will offer them no tip. So she says, obviously, Sartre and Beauvoir. I always say in interviews, I did not invent anything. This comes from Beauvoir's The Second Sex,
right,
which is, I did not invent anything. For example, the fact that the structure of my film is not in three acts. This is all about shedding skin in order to get to a form of essence of the characters and a form of essence of the film. I always illustrate it by saying you have to be many to be one. And again, I have not invented that concept. This is purely existentialist, but it's really something I do believe in life. I do believe for my characters and I do believe for myself. So I see everything like a form of metamorphosis, constant metamorphosis of various skins that somehow, no matter where it's going, it's not even important. The important fact is that it happens and this is how you get to grow up. And that leads me to my point about this film. The universe that she's created has a certain set of rules. And a certain set of rules are mental.
Right.
They are insane. There is nothing in this film that's metaphorical. There is nothing in this film that's like dream sequency or anything like this. Everything that you see on screen really happens.
Yeah.
Because in that universe, that's all a possibility. And it's not a case of getting you into a place where you're comfortable with that.
Mm.
It's a case of going... We live here now.
Yeah.
And you just have to make use of it.
Fine.
Which I fucking love. But then she's also gone on to say in other interviews that she treats her films the way that she treats her real life, which is why it took a while to get into the writing of Titane. My films are layers that I leave behind me to get to the next skin. So it's finding herself deeper and deeper. So she explores her own beliefs a lot in her medium, which is fucking gorgeous. So this film descends from relatively normal into insane chaos.
Right, yeah.
Rapidly.
Rapidly.
There's no three-act structure. It's just a continuous descent.
Right.
Until it stops descending and you hit a weirdly warm spot. A weirdly warm spot that I'm going to get into in a moment.
Here's my thing.
You're throwing fists at me.
Right, here's my thing. As somebody who, you know, I enjoy reading these books and I enjoy my arty cinema and I enjoy all the things that she's bringing up.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a failure of thought. I don't think she's underthought. I don't think she's undercooked it. I think it's, unfortunately, the insecurity of having to follow Raw has led to a sort of strangely self-involved, almost masturbatory film where it's great that she's having a lovely time, but I'm not. Because I'm like, okay, so you've ditched the three-act structure.
Yep.
You've changed the rules of the universe, but not acknowledged it and not explained them to me.
Right.
You've got an unlikable main character. So it comes back to that, what are you doing for me?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm with this show, we borrow an hour of everyone's time. And we're really aware of the fact of, like, we're guests in these people's ears.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to provide something that's at least entertaining and at least slightly informative, right?
Yeah, there's something there.
There's something there.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, even if the show's not for you, we can be like, well, we did this for you, right?
Yeah.
This feels like Julia's diary at times.
Okay.
Where she's just gone, I like this. And I also like this. Mm-hmm. And I like this. And I was thinking this. And I was also thinking this. And I don't care if you've never thought that. I did.
Okay.
And because the filmmaking, you know, the shots are incredible, soundtrack's great.
It's so good.
It's really good. And so there's some scenes that are really like viscerally affecting.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a party in the upstairs flat. And I'm just like, I'd like to be there.
I'll agree. I'll agree, but I don't want to be there.
Right, okay.
It is like a party upstairs and you can hear and see everything that's going on. You're like, oh dear. Oh dear, that's going to be a mess to clean up.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think with that though, that's really fucking interesting that you've brought that up. This isn't in my notes. This has just hit me as you saying that. With Alexia, did you feel any empathy at any point?
Nope.
Zero.
None.
Do you know the one point where I actually got on board with Alexia?
Right.
And where at the bridge that sort of put me and her in the same room. When she's on her killing spree and she is in that house where she's hooking up with Justine.
Yes.
She stabs Justine in the ear and then it turns out there's someone else there and she's like, oh God. And she kills that dude with the stool and then she sits on the stool and she's like, fuck, I'm knackered. And then there's someone else there and she's like, oh my God.
How many are you in?
Just the exhausted fucking like, oh, I've got to deal with this shit now.
Right.
That moment I was like, that the fully
first
relatable
bit of relatability I had for that character, but we're over an hour into the movie,
right?
And I'm just like, you got to give me something, Julia.
100%.
Because it feels like a monologue that's not to me or for me,
but it's a silent monologue because that character is almost mute. But the fact that it felt like a monologue meant that she was saying something.
She was
with nothing,
yeah.
And that is like objectively cool because I'm so fucking glad you just said monologue. I'm good. I'm all right. Fuck this. I'm rounding it out. You ready?
Yeah.
The themes of Titane.
Because I have no idea what this film means. It is a Jackson Pollock made with motor oil. It's like I fell asleep watching Top Gear and had a wank.
So it was if Top Gear and Mulholland Drive fucked.
We were both on screen right. as I fell asleep.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Sound. All right. So this film is like mad thematically rich. This is just me personally, by the way. I got shitloads from it. For me to talk about each theme individually, it would be a full hour-long episode to dive into each one, what it meant, the symbolism behind it, all of this stuff, right?
It's a rich, fertile ground for your brain.
There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
So I've written, as concise as I can, just a small piece that like sums up everything that's important to me and the symbolism that this represents, right? So the metal plate in Alexia's head symbolizes trauma and emotional detachment.
Funny that.
Lacking any real human connection, especially in her cold, loveless relationship with her father and her mother who pretends all is normal, Alexia is treated like an object, not a person.
Yeah, very much so.
This dehumanization shapes her disregard for human life and her attraction to objects, especially cars. So her pregnancy by a car reflects the extreme of her alienation. She no longer needs a man to reproduce. Mm-hmm. Particularly in a world where men don't even see her as a person until she meets Vincent. Now, Vincent, burdened by all of his own trauma and all of his own loss, is the first man who looks at her with genuine love.
Yeah.
Not romantic love, but
no,
it is a genuine love. His obsession with fire contrasts Alexia's emotional coldness. He represents warmth and the potential to melt her icy defenses. So you've got hot and cold there.
Yeah.
Yet his love is complicated, right? So he's projecting his missing son onto her.
Yes.
Both characters struggle with identity. Alexia resists her traditional gender roles, whilst Vincent clings onto a hyper-masculine image through steroid use, constant working out, and terrified that this harem of ridiculously fit firefighters are no longer going to respect him if he can't hold his own.
Yeah. A ream of ridiculously fit firefighters. I hadn't considered that.
So each of these characters, they're navigating a form of body dysmorphia and societal expectation that is almost polar opposite to each other.
Yes, they are.
So you have this whole thing building up there. Vincent is an absolute sweetheart. He's a cunt, but he's a sweetheart. Mm-hmm. And I related to him far too much. Terrified me. So the birth scene at the climax of their emotional journey. When Vincent sees Alexia's body for the first time, he can no longer deny that she isn't his son.
Yeah.
Yet he chooses to love her anyway.
He does.
He makes an active choice to go,
there is something missing in my life. I've been using this person to fill it. This person is not... I can no longer lie to myself that they're not a person. But does it really matter?
Does it really matter?
If it quacks like a duck and it walks like a duck, it may as well just be a duck.
Exactly. Yeah. The baby, a bizarre part metal being, doesn't need to make sense. It simply needs to be loved. And that is what Titane is really about. In a chaotic world, grappling with identity, technology, and shifting norms, unconditional love is the only stable force. Even people as lost as Alexia and Vincent can find love and redemption through acceptance, giving birth to something entirely new.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense. That does all click together.
It's all just an interpretation. There is nothing there. And that is 100%. Me. This is me writing this.
No, but
I had to rewrite this at 5 a.m. this morning.
you've nailed it. It makes perfect sense. And those, I don't like it. It does all click together. But you can also just go, all you need is love. And I get the same, but that's 3 minutes.
So Julia Ducournau wouldn't disagree with us either.
Right.
She says in an interview with Altitude Films, I don't like to explain my films. So there you go. Whatever you think it is, it is. It's right. And if you take it at surface level, you're not just misunderstanding Julia's art. You're doing yourself an injustice. Not you personally.
No, I know.
Just in general.
Yeah, yeah.
There's
yeah.
something there. Whether you like it or not, there is a deeper meaning under it. There's an undercurrent of something.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're willing to sort of stick with it, if it speaks to you and you find that little nugget, awesome. If it's not for you and you're just sort of like, meh, also fine. You know what I mean? You just get a goofy body horror, yeah. She fucked a car, and now car baby. Yeah. Also Vincent Lindon, who is like one of France's biggest classical actors, being a mental.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's fucking awesome, man. The thing that I'm going to take away from Detained more than anything else,
right.
with the little adventure that it took me on,
right.
doesn't matter what mood I'm in. It doesn't matter where my head's at, because I've had a weird few weeks.
Yeah.
And I've been in wildly different moods from day to day.
Yeah.
Some I'm in a great mood, some I'm in a fucking awful mood, some I'm in like just a blind panic. And I'll be watching this, I'll be watching snips of it, I'll be dipping and diving into it to do the research for this episode. And I'm just left with, what am I going to discover now?
Mm-hmm.
What little gem did I miss last time that I'm picking up on this time?
Yeah.
And every single time that I've watched it, regardless of what mood I'm in, it spoke to me in one way or another. The undercurrent is always there. But there's times where I sort of feel desperately sorry for Alexia because of nature over nurture,
mm-hmm.
producing a product that is just so outrageously cold, but desperate to not be.
Sure.
And then you have Vincent, who is so desperately warm and desperate to give his love because he's had it taken away from him.
Mm.
To fill that hole is like do or die. It doesn't matter anymore. He takes mad risks at work. He runs into wildfires. House fires are no longer a thing. He's just careless with everything. Accept that. And yeah, Vincent might be my spirit animal in that sense. Just because it's like the decisions he makes, we've made in the past. The
application of love will fix all, right?
Yes.
I get that.
And I
get
fucking
that.
Love it.
It's been an interesting episode for me because I fucking despise this film.
Okay.
But there's nothing, what I don't want to do to the audience or you is what I feel Julia Ducournau does with this film.
Okay.
I have my thoughts, I have my feelings about this film. I just don't think they'd be particularly fun for you to sit through for an hour.
Okay.
Or the audience
to sit through
for an hour. Or I just go, it's fart-sniffing, pretentious bollocks that means nothing. Mm-hmm. Hearing somebody say that for an hour, that's a sentence.
It is.
It's a perfectly fine sentence.
Sure.
And then what's more interesting is why you love it, right?
Got you.
Why you've connected with it.
Got you.
I can sit there and I can kind of infer things about you and learn something about my friend.
Got you.
Or I can sit there and tell a one sentence for an hour.
Okay.
And I feel like I didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Julia Ducournau did.
She did.
And I think that's my resentment, is because she is allowing herself 2 hours of my life to say a sentence when I won't even spend an hour of yours telling you why I didn't like it.
Okay, I see that.
Because it's nothing. It's not for you, right?
Yeah, of course. No, so, I get that.
So
I'm very grateful for that.
It's an odd film. There is some really powerful imagery. I find it really difficult when you ask the audience to connect with a serial killer. Because
it's a dangerous thing.
Well, here's the thing. You get into the, well, is murder worse than sexual assault?
Which is the question raised in Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Portrait of a Serial Killer. Yeah. So there's that sense of like, if this was a man who was going around serially sexually assaulting women and the film played out the exact same way, no one would think this was a good film. But because we seem to have sort of socially decided that murder on television is less emotionally affecting, and we feel less empathy for the victims of murder because we see it so often in film.
All the time. Everyone's used to it.
We've become desensitized to it, and so we can tell this story of like, what if she's a serial killer but she deserves love anyway? And I'm like, fuck that.
Okay. So I get what you're saying. I have a theory as to why you don't like it.
Right, okay. Hit me.
I feel like if me and you were given enough time, and I set the standard of, mm-hmm. I want to do this type of movie.
Yes.
And we were to sit and write a story together. Yep. The themes and the way that the themes are delivered, mm-hmm. are dangerously close to how you would pitch them.
This is the thing.
This is it, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like the take home and the thing that I admire most about Julia DeCorno in this movie particular is the way that she's gone. How do you show someone who thinks that they don't deserve love, mm-hmm. or they're too far gone, or they're too fucked up, or they're too unlovable? Yeah. How do you show that person that regardless of what's going on, they deserve love?
Yeah.
You show them the absolute worst example, yeah. of a human person,
yep.
being the worst human person,
yep.
and going, it still tracks. The most extreme version,
yes.
that you could not possibly live up to, and it still tracks.
But you're right.
It's great.
The thesis is a thesis that I would support. 100%. The themes are themes that I would support. But I think if we were to do this,
yeah.
because I've met you, because I had you go, you look like a magician and your fucking books are weird, right? I went, oh, that's a good point, actually, and learned to cut that medicine with a spoonful of sugar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which Julia's just been like, nah, fuck it. Everyone's interested in what I've got to say.
100%. No. She's interested in what she thinks, and she's interested about getting it out
right,
there.
Right.
That's self-confidence through the fucking roof.
It is. It's a level of self-confidence that becomes self-interest. Because for me personally, mm-hmm. and not you.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
You've not done that trade with the audience. Right, okay. If we were to do a thing, I'd be like, Ben, these themes are great. This thesis is great.
Yeah, yeah.
Who's going to give a fuck?
Julia DeCorno.
We need to do it in a three-act structure. We need to lean on some of the reliable, tried and true methods of cinema, because it's all very well having a fascinating thesis and a fascinating subtext. But if people don't want to make it as far as the credits, what's the fucking point?
And then we would have made Raw.
Yeah.
And then I think we'd get so fucked off with Raw and everyone expecting bullshit. We'd be like, you know what? Fuck you. It's not having three structures and she's fucking a car. Eat my dick.
have we got time for a comment corner? I know we're a little over time.
We do, buddy.
Because we had some good ones this week.
We've had a great one this week. But the thing is, I wanted to do something a little different. You left a comment on a post about Dogma.
Dogma's getting re-released in 4K.
I think you put thank God.
Thank God, yeah.
Or God damn, or something like this. Thank God. Yeah. God damn. Let me find it, because it is hilarious. But yeah, so I thought I'd do something a little different.
Right.
Reached out to a very dear friend of the show, and a very fucking very talented voiceover artist. Because I feel like...
Voiceoverized.
Yeah.
What? What have
so
you done?
I feel like what I'm going to do done? Is I'm going to portray you in this scenario, and then the responses from this person are going to be portrayed by our voiceover friend.
Oh my God. You've got... Okay.
Alex.
Okay, yeah. Go for it.
So Alex, thank you very much for this. It is honestly one of the greatest things that has existed in my email for a long time. There's four comments back and forth. Your first comment is about goddamn time.
Yeah, because it is about
goddamn
time.
It's getting a 4DX re-release in the States.
Good.
About goddamn time. And then Sir Rick Zero chimes in with,
now, you should stop using the god's name in vain. Mm-hmm.
Tell me that that doesn't sound like the southern drawl of Mia Goth and Pearl.
Alex has nailed it.
She's fucking smashed it.
She's fucking smashed it.
So you come back with, as soon as God comes back, I'll say sorry.
Yeah, because
he'll forgive me.
He's famous for forgiving people.
He's famous for forgiving people. And Sir Rick didn't agree with this. He went on to say,
you don't understand the theology then. When Jesus comes back and he is actually seen by everyone, that's right, there's no saying, I'm sorry. Time is up at that point. All bets are off and the rapture commences. Also, capitalize God, because he is the almighty, almighty God and the most high. God isn't forgiving you once Jesus comes and he leaves with the Holy Spirit.
That's
the best thing we've ever put on the show.
I almost married her this morning when she sent that through. I was like, that's Mia Goth in Pearl. How the fuck are you doing this?
Oh my God.
Yeah. Dude, that's insane. Alex, thank you so fucking much for that.
You nailed it. Well done, Alex.
Seriously, absolutely fucking smashed it. And that's Comment Corner. That's what it is. There you go. If you want to be involved in Comment Corner, you know what to do. But just in case you don't, we are active on socials everywhere. Go leave a comment. Let us know what you think about the movie.
Yeah.
We'll fucking probably put you in if it's funny.
If it's funny.
Or if it's profound.
Or if it's just God-bothering.
Or if it's profanity.
Yeah, profanity.
Go crazy.
Good. Yeah, yeah.
Do
yeah,
your thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Do your thing.
Ben, I hesitate to ask this. What are you rating?
Fat 10. Absolute fat 10.
Fat 10.
This is in my top 10 films of all time.
Yeah, this is gonna suck. So
what are you doing?
I don't know, man, because I respect that you love it, right? Yeah. So I can't give it a zero. And there's some...
I don't think it's possible to give it a zero.
No, I agree.
Artistically dense it is.
Well, It is. You can pack too much into a film so that it doesn't cohere in any meaningful way. And I think that's, for me, what this film does.
Okay.
But it's not a zero. It's shot capably. There are some interesting and evocative imagery in some of the scenes. Some of the performances are okay. I wasn't sold by any of the actors in this.
Vincent Linden, man.
Not at all.
Fucking
love
him.
Didn't buy it for a fucking second.
Fucking love him.
So I'm gonna give it a 3.
Okay.
And then out of respect for you, bump it up to a 4.
Okay.
Because my friend really enjoyed it and got something from it, so I respect it more.
I love that.
So it's a 4.
Cool.
I would say to anybody that is debating watching this, just don't. It's fucking shite. But
this film made her the second ever female director to win the Palme d'Or at Cannes.
Says everything you need to know.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're the sort of person that likes films that win the Palme d'Or at Cannes,
yeah,
maybe give this a go.
Yeah.
If you've never seen a Palme d'Or winning film, skip it. Just fucking get it out of your life.
Didn't Pulp Fiction win it 1 year?
Possibly.
I think Pulp Fiction won it.
That's not what it's famous for, though, is it?
No.
That's not its main accolade. It's not Pulp Fiction's a shite film. Oh, but it won the Palme d'Or.
Yeah.
It did?
It did. Yeah.
There we go.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. Fucked clocks right twice a day. That's it. We're at the end of the show. We love you all dearly.
Thank you so fucking much for hanging out with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. It genuinely means the world to us. Support is insane. Now go fucking tell your friends.
Go tell your friends.
Get them in here.
This show's free. We're keeping it free. We might get adverts coming soon. We're working on that. Patreon's £1 a month. So yeah. If you want the unedited, full chaos version of this show,
yeah,
usually runs anywhere from 15 minutes to a full half hour longer.
Yeah, just, I'm dyslexic as fuck. It takes me ages to read this shit.
Yeah.
And we're not kind about it.
No, you nailed it today, bud. And yeah, go check us out on Patreon. It starts at £1. We love you dearly. Ben is now going to thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start of the week. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday, so he's going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and feelings.
No, I'm not.
All of them concisely into a Monday motivational pep talk to help you get through the week. While I just tell you to Gonzo.
I'm not going
to
wrap it all up into one Monday motivational speech. I'm going to do 2 because I'm fucking inspired this week, mate.
Oh, I don't have the breath for that.
Entertain. Entertain. We learn one thing. It doesn't matter how far you go, how much you fuck up. You deserve love. It's never too late. You're never too far. Keep pushing for you.
Oh, I ran
you
will out of eventually. Breath. It's got to stop.
You will eventually.
I've got to stop.
Find what you need.
No, I ran out of breath.
And then
Gonzo.
To combat this, Rob, and that little outburst there. In the words of the Murder Dolls, motherfucker, I don't care. Motherfucker, I don't care.